From the great state of Ohio, Buckeye Firearms Association presents Keep and Bear Radio, fighting for Second Amendment rights, calling out media lies, and telling the gun grabbers to come and take it. Now, Keep and Bear Radio.
They call themselves 97%. And claim to support the Second Amendment. But they also support assault weapon bans, magazine bans, bump stock bans, red flag laws, and even permits to own firearms. So who are these guys, and what are they up to? That's what we're going to talk about on this episode of Keep and Bear Radio. I'm Dean Reek, Executive Director of Buckeye Firearms Association, and I'm joined by Lee Williams, Chief Editor of the Second Amendment Foundation's Investigative Journalism Project and board member of Florida Carry. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dean. It's good to be back.
So, Lee, what have you been up to? Doing anything fun down there in the Sunshine State?
Yeah, we're getting to the point here in Florida where going to the range is hot out. Let's put it that way. You need to bring plenty of ammo and plenty of water. I have recently picked up what I consider now my best plate carrier. And I'm not huge on plate carriers. Usually when I go out to the range, I'll wear a battle belt with my handgun and some rifle mags. But I got an offer I couldn't refuse on some lightweight ceramic plates. I wrote a story about that are only retail for around a couple hundred bucks. So I went out to the range with new plates and a new plate carrier, and I'm very happy. Ran some drills, spent the whole day out there. The plate carrier is fantastic. Made by a company called Otte Gear, OTTEgear.com. They don't make a lot of things, but what they do is pretty good. They've got a lot of good advisors and guys helping them come up with ideas for new products. One of them is a good friend of mine. He retired from Delta Force. And a lot of the guys are climbers, they're outdoorsmen. So if your members are looking for good gear, go to OtteGear.com. I'm incredibly happy with all of their products that I've purchased. Like I said, you can find stuff online on Amazon a lot cheaper, but unlike the Amazon stuff, the OtteGear stuff will actually last and you can use it.
Do you do any competition?
No, I don't. Not at all. I did when I was a lot younger. For me, I don't like the training scars. I don't like the gameplay, things like that. I'll rather go out with myself or a couple of friends. We'll just run some drills. I belong to a range near Fort Meade, Florida. It's called Range Works, W-E-R-X, and it's run by my friend. He owns it. It's an adult range. You can draw from the holster. You can shoot while moving. You get your own bay when you go out there, not your own spot at the table. And you can shoot at night, use your night vision or your white lights. That's my home away from home.
Yeah, I started out in competition, things like Bullseye and did a little bit of IDPA, stuff like that, which is kind of the nerdy end of gun owners because you get into a lot of, really funky training and stuff that ordinary people don't do. I thought that all was pretty fun. I'm not doing that much anymore, but I always enjoyed it. I always enjoyed the competition.
All shooting is good. All competition is good. I don't have any problem with it. It's just not for me.
Well, Lee, let's get down to what we said we were going to talk about, and that's this gun group, this so-called gun group out there claiming to respect the Second Amendment, while, of course, calling for more gun control. We've seen this before. You've reported on them recently, and I think they've been around since about 2020 or so. They call themselves 97%, which supposedly is a reference to research which they claim is the number of Americans that support gun control. So, they're posing as the representative, supposedly, of the majority of gun owners, while those of us in the Second Amendment community, they sort of push off to the side and call us radicals and not really representative of ordinary gun owners. So who are these guys? What is 97%? And what is it that they're up to?
Well, I have more respect for Giffords and Brady and Everytown than I do these clowns. I mean, at least with Giffords, Brady, and Everytown, you know they're an anti-gun group, right? This group, this 97%, they tried to masquerade as a pro-gun group. They got their name from a debunked Quinnipiac poll that said 97% of Americans support mandatory background checks, which we both know is crap. And they labeled the remaining 3%, which I guess would be you and I, as, and I got a quote here, loud voices who have crowded out conversation and prevented collaboration between gun owners and non-gun owners. Well, I don't want to collaborate with anybody that, you know, is opposed to my way of life, that wants to take the tools that I have in my gun safes and ban them. And they never, you know, it's this faux group. It's completely fake. They talk about gun violence and how to end gun violence. Any group that's using gun violence, right, I'm done with. They were founded in 2020. They like to say that they're a mix of gun owners and non-gun owners. And they actually have quotes on their website from both gun owners and non-gun owners. And, you know, I've been a journalist for a long time, more than 20 years. And I got to tell you, I've quoted thousands of people. These quotes are too perfect, Dean. They're made up. They're a bunch of crap. And I'm just going to read one. This is from John. It's on their website. He's described as a non-gun owner. And I quote, "My support for criminal background checks shouldn't automatically label me a gun grabber. I think the conversation needs to be much more nuanced so that both sides can coexist and come to the table without feeling like everything you believe is at stake." Okay, I've never got a quote like that in my life. People use what's called paralinguistic interjections. There's ums, there's ers. And, you know, they got a new leader, Olivia Troia. She's a Washingtonian. She's part of the swamp. And who does she go to appear on? What show does she go to appear on to talk about her brand, her new role in this great gun group? She goes on The View with the ladies, and she tells them that her group's mission is to, quote, "bring gun owners into the conversation and to bring them to the table in order to work on reducing gun deaths happening across the country while including them in the solution," which I found out was a bunch of crap because I'm the one gun owner she wouldn't come to the table to talk to. She's trying to stake out this moderate centrist crap. And so I took a deep dive into them. And despite, you know, everything that she claims they want to include gun owners, I found this is just a run-of-the-mill anti-gun group. Although this one has better messaging and better PR than most of them. Here's what I was able to find by diving into their website and their tweets and their social media. 97% supports an assault weapon ban, a ban on standard capacity magazines. They want to ban bump stocks. They want expanded red flag laws. They want permits to purchase firearms, permits to carry firearms, and permits to possess firearms. They want you to lose your Second Amendment rights upon conviction of a, quote, violent misdemeanor, whatever that is. They support mandatory storage laws, but they don't even talk about, you know, what that could lead to, which would be mandatory home inspections by police. They've supported background checks, mandatory background checks, but they never mentioned this would lead to mandatory firearm registration and the creation of a national gun registry. They actually said they had somebody, some fool in one of their social media say that the Second Amendment is, and I'm quoting, overprotected. That's the first time I've ever heard that. They say that rapid fire guns are not used for hunting or home defense, but they never define what that term means. Although semi-automatics, they refer to as weapons of war. They said that constitutional carry results in increased homicide rates. We just saw across the country they're falling because there are now 29 states with some form of constitutional carry. And the last thing I'll say is I went through their board, and if you want to know how an organization will react, will be led, you got to look at their board, which I'll get to in a minute. But as you can imagine, the mainstream media took a look at him and went, oh, my God, it's a centrist pro-gun group that has both non-gun owners and gun owners in it. And the thing became a media darling. I mean, Washington Post wrote a story about him in 2022 that was titled, "Will Gun Owners Fight for Stronger Gun Laws?" These bastards actually think that they can speak on behalf of gun owners. It's crazy. So I took a hard dive into their board, and here's what I found. One of their directors, you might remember the name, Richard Aborn. He's the former head of what used to be Center to Prevent Handgun Violence and then became Handgun Control, Inc., and now it's the Brady Campaign. According to his bio, this is one of their directors. He was the principal strategist behind the passage of the Brady Handgun Violence Prevention Act and the federal assault weapon ban. And this dude's on the board of this alleged pro-gun group. They got two cats, John Goodwin and Abra Belke, who were actual lobbyists for NRA. They were national lobbyists. However, Godwin has since broke. They both broke with NRA. Abra went radio silent, but John has become a anti-gun resource for the legacy media. He was interviewed in 2022 and said, a big, big part of the gun rights movement is if we give them an inch, they take 1,000 miles. I don't buy that anymore. I mean, talk about the wrong timing. They've got a couple of three congressmen on the board, Congress critters, Steve Israel, Seth Moulton, and Carlos Curbelo. They never met an anti-Second Amendment law that they didn't support. All three of them, of course, were endorsed by Everytown. They got a guy, and here's this guy I never heard of. I'm not that big into country music. I'm more of a metalhead. But there's this country music guy called Ketch Secor. He was founder of the Old Crow Medicine Show Band. I guess they've got a couple of Grammys. He's on their board. He recently wrote a guest essay in the New York Times titled, Country Music Can Lead America Out of Its Obsession with Guns. And in that, I swear to God, he actually wrote, it's time for country music makers to use their platforms to speak candidly to their conservative audiences. Our outrage needs to move from the green room to center stage.
Well, you know, I wonder about country music because country music used to be country. And these days, you know, Beyonce is doing country music. So, you know, I don't know that they're really all that country anymore. Lee, I took a look at their Facebook page because sometimes you can tell a lot about a group by what they're doing on social media. So I looked at their Facebook and they only have like 11,000 followers. Now, this is a national group. We, Buckeye Firearms Association, is just a one-state group. You know, we're Ohio. We have 7 or 8 times the number of followers they do on a one-state level. They don't seem to be doing much outreach. You know, they're not trying to really promote themselves all that much, but they get people on TV. They place stories in national media. And I kind of wonder if they're really trying to attract gun owners or if they're just really a propaganda organization. In other words, they just set themselves up to feed misleading stories and commentary to the media.
They are a psyop. They are a psychological operation. Their sole purpose, like you said, they're not recruiting. They're not asking for money. There's no mailers going out. They want to be on CNN. They want to be on MSLSD. They want to be on all these liberal networks. They want to be in the New York Times, the Washington Post. Well, look at their board member, Michael McKinnon. You know, he's that guy. He was part of the No Labels movement. He's always got some weird hat and guy wears a scarf. He's on their board. He's anti-gun as hell. I mean, this is an anti-gun group, and I think it's insidious. I mean, you see a quote coming from Everytown. You know what they're saying, and you know who's behind it. Same with Brady. Same with Giffords. But these guys purport to talk on behalf of gun owners. That's why they're so dangerous. They're just not as well-funded. But like you said, you don't need to be that well-funded to get in the Rolodex of some legacy media reporter who's going to turn to them whenever they need to try and get some balance in a story. I mean, my boss, Alan Gottlieb, who founded the Second Amendment Foundation and CCRKBA, said it best. He said anti-gun groups like 97% claim to include gun owners solely to bolster their own credibility. Their stated goals are mandatory background checks, increased red flag laws, and yada, yada, yada. But most gun owners are smart. They'll see right through this obvious attempt at gaslighting. And Mr. Gottlieb could not be more correct. These guys, they're dangerous because they purport to speak on our behalf. And about 2 days after I wrote that story, now we're into Women's History Month. And they started tweeting pictures of pro-gun women. Julie Golub, a champion shooter, Rhonda Izzell, Robin Sandovar, Lena Mikulic, Kim Rohde, and Carrie Lightfoot, as well as Lucille Ball. Evidently, Lucy was a gun, big shotgunner, and Annie Oakley. And they put out these posts featuring these women's photos, which they scooped right off the internet, and they put out under on 97%'s website. And one of them says, "We continue to celebrate Women's History Month, honoring Julie Golub." And there they got a little bit of bio on her. They got a little bit of bio on a couple other ones. And I called Julie. And man, and I called Rhonda. They did not give their permission to use these photos. The photo they stole from Rhonda came right off her website. I mean, she's a founder of Chicago Guns Matter. And she's pissed, and rightfully so. She's talking to an attorney. I mean, this is plagiarism. And it's use of false light. But the most worrisome thing about this to me is a lot of these women, a lot of these female shooters are sponsored. Okay. What are their sponsors going to think when they see their name, their photo, their bio on an anti-gun website? I mean, they put they put these women's livelihood at risk.
Yeah. And I looked at their website as well. And it's a pretty well designed website. There are certain policies that they're pushing really hard, and there were four of them. Now, you've mentioned at least one of these or two of these. One of the first, and I want to talk about how they construct these, because I think it's very clever how they put these together, sort of like Legos, to create something that's kind of interesting. First, they want violent misdemeanor laws. So right now, you can be disqualified from owning firearms if you have felony-level offenses, you know, serious offenses.
Or domestic violence, misdemeanors for domestic violence.
True. And there are problems with that. But my point here is usually that the disqualifications are felony-level. They want violent misdemeanor laws. Now, the way they'll present this is, you know, we just want to make sure that we're including everyone who's violent, and we don't want any violent people to own firearms. But if you actually look at what violent misdemeanor laws are, you know, what a violent misdemeanor is, that could be something, Lee, like destruction of property. So
right.
If I get pissed with you and I key your car, that could be destruction of property. That could be a violent misdemeanor. Tampering with evidence, touching somebody without consent, cyber stalking. You know, there are these sort of low-level crimes that are not necessarily violent, that can be classified as violent. So all this is, the result of it, is just reducing the number of people who can own guns. I think it's very insidious because of what comes next. It sets up then, because these violent misdemeanors are state level. And then there's a requirement that you have to have background checks at the state level, which is the next thing they talk about. They don't want just, you know, the next check, they want state-level background checks as well. And the only reason you would need that is to get these violent misdemeanors. So they set up a new level of crime, and then they say, well, to catch these, we need state-level background checks. And then on top of that, they say, what we're going to have to do after the check to make sure that, you know, we're enforcing this is we need the permits. We need the gun purchase permits, we need the possession permits, we need a separate permit for concealed carry, and you can kind of see how they build this. They can't get to that point unless they have these violent misdemeanors. Then they require the checks, then they require the permits, and then where are we then? Well, a registry. Because once you have everybody who owns a gun that needs a permit, you have an automatic registry. So training, fees, permits, all to exercise a constitutional right.
Well, yeah, I agree with you 100%. That is their end game. And, you know, you mentioned earlier that they're not out there soliciting. They don't have a lot of Facebook members. I looked at their financials, their IRS Form 990s. They got about $230,000 worth of assets. That's not a lot. But like we said earlier,
for a national group, not just a state group,
for a national group, that's practically nothing. But like you said, and like we've said, you don't need a lot of money to be in a reporter's Rolodex. And unfortunately, these people are being called. They're getting calls. They're doing interviews. Hell, she got a 15-minute segment on The View. Now, I don't watch The View, okay, obviously, but a lot of people do. And she had a long segment on that show. She was able to spout her anti-gun propaganda, which, as we said, is wrapped up in this centrist, we have pro-gun, we have gun owners in our group too. No, they don't. No, they don't. I don't know anybody that values the Second Amendment that is going to join this mishmash of an organization. And NSSF has been tracking them for a while too. Mark Oliva was very kind with some of his comments. He called them out. We need to call them out before, God forbid, some of our members join this group.
Then the fourth thing that they're calling for, which is pretty typical, is red flag laws. And, you know, a lot of people think that they support red flag because on the surface, it sounds really reasonable. Look, you know, somebody's acting strange, so let's take their guns away. And most people will say, yeah, but that's fine. I don't want some wacko with guns. But we've always opposed red flag because basically it runs counter to, you know, American law in every other area.
It's the pesky constitution.
Right. It's inherently unjust because there's no due process. Basically, we're going to take your property and then we'll go to court and figure out if we did the right thing or not. In other words, you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
Well, and the justices on the Supreme Court hinted, I forget the case. It wasn't a red flag law, but it involved the seizing of firearms by police. And they said very clearly in their order to that case that they're going to take a look at red flag laws here pretty soon. They don't think very highly of them. And I know that there were a couple of, even of the liberal justices that didn't like the fact that, yeah, this is a violation of your Fourth Amendment, your Fifth Amendment, and obviously your Second Amendment.
And these red flag laws can be structured in a lot of different ways. We've had that, you know, they tried that here in Ohio. They've tried it elsewhere. Never once have we seen a red flag law that starts with due process. It's always, we're going to take your property and then we're going to figure out later. In other words, your due process comes after we've punished you.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I mean, I guess if you're a Tom Cruise fan, you know, and you think that Tom Cruise is going to be able to see into the future with pre-crime and know who's going to do bad things, you know, that's fine. But we don't actually have that. And in the United States, you're innocent until proven guilty. Does that mean that sometimes people are going to do bad things and we won't be able to stop them in advance? Well, yeah, because that's true with everything. We don't know in advance when someone's going to drive drunk or when someone's going to rob a store. We just don't have pre-crime. That's what red flag is getting at. You know, we're trying to see into the future, and the problem is we're infringing on rights, and you just can't do that. That's not how our law system works.
Yeah, and the complaint can, depending on which state you're in, this is the big thing too. I mean, in Florida, you know, they're a little more restricted. Unfortunately, we have them here, but some states allow neighbors, non-family members, coworkers, colleagues to drop a red flag law on somebody. And the next, and here's the thing that gets me most, because we just saw the horrors that can happen when police go up to a door too ready for battle. We had an E3 Air Force kid down here that was just killed by law enforcement because they went to the wrong house, shot him to death. He was a special ops, served on an AC-130, special ops Air Force kid, shot him to death because he answered the door with a gun. No warning, nothing. That's the dangers that can happen when you have law enforcement coming to your door unannounced. Okay. So we need to cut down on the amount of times that law enforcement will be going up to the home of a gun owner ready to rock. That's what happened in Little Rock with the ATF. That's what just happened here. The whole state is grieving the loss of this kid right now. He was shot to death by an Oskaloosa County deputy here in Florida.
How do you go to the wrong house? You're ex-law enforcement, right? How do you, because my house has the address on the house.
It was an apartment, unfortunately.
An apartment, okay. And so they just got bad information?
There was some kind of disturbance. They were sent. They knocked on his door. They walked away. He looked out, saw nobody there. They knocked on his door. So he comes to the door with a gun in his hand, like I would have, okay? Although I would have probably bootlegged mine behind my rear. The deputy opens the door, sees the gun in his hand. It's pointed straight down at the ground, shoots and kills him. Shot him 6 times.
Were these rookie cops? I mean,
I don't know. All of that is going to come out. I just saw the body cam, and I put it this way, I've been angry for a few hours. No warning, no nothing. The guy's a gun in his hand. He dies. Heroic kid. I mean, Air Force Special Ops kid out of Hurlburt.
So, Lee, this 97%, you know, this really isn't, to me, all that different. We've tracked groups like this for a long time. I remember there was a group called Americans for Gun Safety, if you remember that, funded by a billionaire by the name of Andrew McKelvey. And it was based on the idea that gun control is maybe not being as successful as it could be because we're calling it gun control. So they decided to use more friendly words like gun safety, right? So Americans for Gun Safety started this idea of let's change the lexicon, let's change how we talk about it, but still push for the same policies. We had the American Hunters and Shooters Association. They masqueraded as good old boys with guns, like, you know, we're all about hunting and shooting. But then they would trash the NRA. They had an alliance with Mayors Against Illegal Guns, which is funded by Bloomberg. And they endorsed Obama for president, right? Totally, totally phony. We've seen groups like Sportsmen for Obama, the American Rifle and Pistol Association, Ohioans for Gun Safety, and one that's still around, March for Our Lives, which is a phony gun group supported supposedly by kids, but really they're created by Everytown for Gun Safety. So we've seen a long, long history of groups like that. Have you seen other groups like this that you've reported on?
Yeah, I just did a story on some physicians that are now using data that one of them wrote a study based on flawed data from the Gun Violence Archive, which I, on my personal website, have debunked more than a dozen times. And they use this data, this false mass shooting data, and then it's like an infection within the medical community, and the infection grows. Somebody will look at that study. They'll do a paper based on that study. They piggyback on it. And the next thing you know, your doctors are asking patients. They're using this data as an excuse to start quizzing their patients about gun ownership. Physicians, doctors are doing this. Well, they'd never heard of the DRGO, the Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, which is a great organization. Second Amendment Foundation helped sponsor them. I interviewed them, one of their guys, John Edine, he's one of their directors. And he said, when you see these physician groups saying gun safety, one, they mean gun control. And two, none of them are capable of actually discussing safe storage or real gun safety with their patients because they don't know a damn thing about it. So yeah, lately it seems like the physicians groups want to get in and play too. But like John said in the story, it's all coming from academia. It's all political. It's all coming out of the White House.
Yeah, I had John on the podcast a while back, and we talked a lot about that. And, you know, I don't want to get into that, but it was interesting. He was saying, you know, the different types of doctors, and some types of doctors are really into guns and others are not, you know, so it's sort of interesting. He said that like emergency room physicians are more likely to have guns than, you know, maybe like a regular family physician. And we talked about that for a little bit. And I thought, well, that's really interesting that, you know, the doctors are not just this, you know, block of people who all think the same way, that they have varying opinions just like everybody else.
Well, my doctor asks me about guns all the time, mostly about where you can get cheap ammo. So I'm pretty happy.
I had a dentist like that for a while, and he found out that that I was part of Buckeye Firearms Association. I would look forward to going in to get my teeth cleaned just to talk to the guy, you know.
But generally, if your doctor asks you about guns, it's time to find a new doctor.
So, like I said, we've tracked these kind of organizations, and what I've seen is there's a pattern, and the pattern is exactly the same every time. So the gun control groups, you know, the big ones that we always hear about, they can't get what they want. So then they create some fake AstroTurf front organization. They pretend like they're gun owners who support the Second Amendment. And then they call for the same gun control policies that every other gun control group wants, all the while hiding their funding and hiding their affiliations with the larger gun groups. And the goal, almost invariably, is just to place propaganda in the media. They want to sway voters at an election time. They want to lend support to legislators who want to pass gun control. And then very often, these groups just vanish. All those groups that I listed, except for March for Our Lives, have all just appeared out of thin air and then vanished within a few years.
The big tell that your members should know is anytime anybody is speaking on behalf of gun owners, they're not. Anytime anybody says, yeah, well, you know, on behalf of all gun owners, I believe that. I mean, I have a loud pulpit, a big pulpit here. I've been blessed. A lot of gun guys will read my stories. I speak on behalf of exactly one gun owner, and that's me. Okay? Don't speak on behalf of my wife or anybody else. So anytime you see anybody out there saying what gun owners want or what gun owners should do or what gun owners need, they're full of crap.
Well, I think it's even simpler than that. If gun owners claim to be saying that they want to curtail their ability to have guns and to use guns and to carry guns and, you know, to hunt and compete and everything else, that makes no sense.
No, and none of these groups ever will. They are, like you said, they are astroturf groups. There's no grassroots here whatsoever.
So it's called 97%. They're completely phony. I saw those quotes on the website, by the way. I spent almost 30 years in marketing. A lot of what I did involved testimonials, and I know exactly what you're saying. I can spot, you know, from a mile away when a testimonial is phony, because when it's real, it's never carefully crafted, you know.
No.
Even if you or I were to give a quote, when you say it out loud, it's not like you're writing it, because you craft it when you're writing it. And when you say it, it's just, you know, the sentences just aren't constructed all that well. Your word choice isn't necessarily all that good. And when you see a perfect, perfect testimonial, it's always phony. Always.
And look at the pictures, too, of these gun owners and non-gun owners. They're all studio shots. They're all beautifully lit. They're all sharp, meaning they're all in focus. And they're all taken from the same camera at the same angle. Now, they bought those from someone. Somebody supplied some stock photos.
Yeah, you should just do a Google search, because you can search images up. You know, they might come from iStock or you know, one of these photo places where you can rent photos. Lee, before I let you go, I know you wanted to say something about a court case coming up involving the Second Amendment Foundation. What's that about?
Before the Supreme Court takes a case and decides it, they usually have a conference. And they have a conference coming next week, May 16th. They're going to look at 5 cases. All of them involve, quote unquote, assault weapon bans. 2 of them are Second Amendment Foundation cases. So we should be hooping and hollering, mean that the Supreme Court, it appears, is going to finally take up an assault weapon ban. Odds on favorite right now is the one we have in Illinois. And then there's also one in Maryland. You know, that before they take a case, there's a lot of scrutiny that goes in it. They want to make sure it is the perfect case. The one in Illinois, according to my folks that work for Second Amendment Foundation on the legal side, would be a great case for them to take up. Alan Gottlieb, our founder, said this might be what we've all been waiting for. And you have to admit, the judges have to be pissed. Look, in Bruin, they spelled out, you can't ban a firearm in common usage. And is there a firearm out there right now in more common usage than the AR?
No, it's officially, from every statistic I've seen, it is America's rifle. It is the most popular, best-selling rifle ever. And the reason that it's popular is really simple. If you know anything about ARs, I'm not an expert, but it's their modular. You know, unlike my grandfather's, you know, Remington, which, you know, it just is what it is. With most ARs, you can change the barrels, you can change the handguards, you can change the stock, the trigger. You can build them any way you want so that you can do very, very specific things like competition or, you know, hunting varmints or whatever it is that you want. And they look nasty. I'll grant you that. There is sort of that tie-in to the marketing, you know, with the military, but that's all it is. It's just visuals.
I would disagree. I think they look beautiful. For me, the big secret,
for the general public, you know, they because they are sort of marketed that way.
the big strength of the AR is it's so ergonomic. I mean, I run AKs and I run ARs. Running an AK is a beast. It takes a long time to get magazine changes down. There's a lot of sharp edges. I usually wear gloves or I come back cut. AR is incredibly ergonomic, easy to shoot, no sharp edges, little, if any, recoil. For me, that's it. And yet, you know, you have 30 rounds of you need to leave me alone in it.
Well, the argument for the AK is that it just keeps running. I mean, it's clunky, it's big, it doesn't have a lot of parts, and just, you know, chunka, it just keeps going, right?
So it's not accurate, but it's accurate enough.
Well, it works. And, you know, for a lot of the countries who use that, you know, they're not going to put a lot of maintenance into them, so they just want a chunky kind of thing that's going to keep working. I get what you're saying.
Good, good.
So, Lee, thanks for spending time with us. And,
my pleasure, Dean.
You know, exposing this 97% group and telling us about this upcoming case, we're going to be following that very closely. Tell our listeners where they can read your original reporting other than on the BFA website where we occasionally run your stories.
Everything I do is at thegunwriter.substack.com. Thegunwriter.substack.com. Second Amendment Foundation publishes all of them, except for a lot of the product reviews, at saf.org. And then we have content sharing agreements. You'll find my stories appear on Truth About Guns, Ammoland, Shooting News Weekly. So I'm not too hard to find.
Well, keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Dean. Enjoyed it.
That's all for this episode of Keep and Bear Radio. If you enjoyed the podcast, I urge you to subscribe. And please subscribe to the Buckeye Firearms Association newsletter at buckeyefirearms.org. If you'd like to become a member and support the work of BFA, go to joinbfa.org. Use the discount code PODCAST to get $10 off your membership. That's joinbfa.org. We'll see you next time on Keep and Bear Radio.